The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Hey, welcome back. Second hour is live. Chris Fowler has called some of the biggest games of the year in college football, and he got to call another one on Saturday, maybe among the most exciting, if not the most exciting, TCU and Kansas State, the Big 12 championship game going into overtime. Chris, great to have you with us, and I know you've got a couple of bigger games coming up here in a few weeks, but what was take us through that experience. That had to be I know it's a serious job, but it had to be a lot of fun to call that game.
I don't do many morning games, Paul. I mean, it was an early wake-up call. That's unusual for me these days. But the Big 12 always delivers. I mean, it's never going to match the SEC in terms of scope or the magnitude of energy. But other than the SEC, year in, year out, the Big 12 championship game, I think, is the best. And they've had four in a row that have come right down to the finish. And, it was a blast to call because it was such a tough, gritty football game. And Kansas State is a hard out, and TCU – you know, had navigated through comeback after comeback throughout the year. Max Duggan, to me, delivered a drive that I will never forget. And I've done this a long time. I don't care how much longer I do it. That drive retook the game over, carried the ball again and again and again, ended up in the end zone on his hands and knees in exhaustion. They don't even get a timeout. He's got to go complete a pass for a two-point conversion, or none of it matters, to get to overtime and fall short. But an example of a guy giving every ounce of energy he's got and putting a team on his back, literally, and running 80 yards total in a drive was mind-blowing to me. All credit to K-State for that goal line stand in overtime. But yeah, I mean, I raced to the airport because the game ran long and got in the plane and was just trying to process what I'd just seen, but really grateful to have a chance to call it.
Chris, by now the conversation has quieted down, but being in your seat on Saturday and then listening to all the rhetoric about TCU yesterday, just your thoughts on how it all fell for them in the CFP.
To me, it was actually pretty straightforward, Paul. I mean, it's rare you hear most pundits give the same four in the same order and the committee actually be right in line with that. I didn't see the logic in dropping TCU behind Ohio State, the nature of the way they lost. They lost by that much at the goal line and a couple of controversial replays that actually could have been viewed differently. And again, credit to Kansas State, but I don't really mark a team down for losing a game by a few inches in overtime. Had they won it, there'd have been no debate. But the fact that one play went the other way, to me, wasn't enough to drop them down when they had five wins over ranked teams and Ohio State had been sitting there idle. That, to me, is important. If Ohio State had done something to jump up, yeah. But I just didn't see any reason to change the top four. I didn't really have an argument with it.
Chris, I know your affection for Nick Saban. You've called some of the biggest and most dramatic moments of his career. But I would like to ask you about his comments. Everyone understands that he was standing up for his team, but he took a rather narrow approach to try to influence the committee, most have concluded. What about you?
You play whatever cards you're dealt, man. Nick didn't have a very good hand at the end of the day, right?
I mean, no.
So he's trying to use things like, hey, in Vegas we'd be favored. Come on. I mean, are we going to really use Vegas as the decisive thing here? Michigan was a 9-point dog against Ohio State. Bama was favored by 13.5 over LSU and 9 over Tennessee. Vegas doesn't get things right all the time, and you can't base rankings on Vegas point spreads. I mean, I've never felt that way. Now, Bama fans might like it because Bama would be favored against every team except Georgia, and that's pretty much the same year in, year out. But we can't use that. And the eye test he mentioned, I understand why people want to use the eye test, but if you're going to use the eye test at the end of the season, then some would say, why play the games? You know, look, Alabama lost two games by 4 points. We all know that. But I heard you point out, quite rightfully, on Sunday, they also were lucky to escape against Texas at Texas A&M. They won those games basically on the final play. So they could have had four losses. They could have been undefeated. There are narrow margins in the sport. At the end of the day, they didn't do enough right in those two losses. A bunch of penalties, a bunch of coverage busts, some turnovers. Bama fans know all this to be true. And I think in their heart of hearts, Bama fans are very smart people and very tuned into the sport. I think you understand why they're not in the bracket this year.
Let me spin ahead to the game that you'll be getting very familiar with in the next few weeks, among others, and that's the Ohio State Georgia game. Ohio State has lost another key player today, I'm not really sure he was going to play anyway, but it just adds to the complexion. The offensive coordinator is heading to Tulsa. I assume he'll be around. I don't know that yet, but just your thoughts on what you're going to be digging into pretty deeply for New Year's Eve.
Yeah, it's a new wrinkle. You have to sort through the personnel and see who's actually there or not there for all sorts of reasons in the postseason games. Look, I mean, you do get a team that feels like it was dead in the water and was in sort of a daze and in a funk for a few days after getting thumped by Michigan and now has a new lease on life. When you combine that with a bunch of talent, they're a dangerous team. I don't care what Georgia fans think of them right now. Ohio State's roster still has a ton of talent, and their defense is improved from last year. They're not the favorites in the game. I mean, Georgia's going to their backyard where they scored 99 points against Oregon and LSU in the two games in that building. For Kirby to say on Sunday, well, the top seed doesn't really matter once you get in the game. Really? The top seed matters in this case a lot because Georgia's playing right there in a building where they're very tough to beat. And I mean, they're a favorite for a reason. Ryan Day can still handle the offense. And I think that Ohio State still has talent around them. I'm not entirely sure that the skill guys who have been rumored in or out between now and the game are actually going to be there. We'll find that out. I think there's still a few plot twists potentially there. But, Georgia, they got a lot to work on. You don't give up 500 passing yards to two different quarterbacks combined at LSU and feel great about your defense, but I expect there'll be a lot of hard work in cleaning things up between now and New Year's Eve.
Chris, you've hosted the Heisman for so many years, and I'm not trying to put you in a position of a handicapper because you have a lot of other things to be concerned about, but I am curious what you think is about the race as we're under an hour here before the voting closes.
Yeah, to be clear, the voters determine the Heisman finalists. Can I just say that again? Because I say it every year for people who think that ESPN decides who to invite. It's just the top four. In the era when votes are electronic, all the ballots are in before the finalists are announced. That wasn't the case in years past, where the accounting company in charge of it used to have to kind of predict how it was going to go. And you didn't always get the final four as the four finalists. Now you do. So I'd be absolutely shocked if Caleb Williams and Max Duggan weren't two of the four finalists. I think Bryce Young is still one of the best players in the country, and I think he'll be on some ballots. Stetson Bennett is representative of a great team. Most who watch Georgia play would not say he's the best player on that team, but that doesn't necessarily carry the day when it comes to Heisman voters. There's a lot of momentum for him. I think Hendon Hooker, it's a shame that he and Blake Corum got hurt. They were having Heisman finalist type seasons. But the way that Williams and Duggan finished, it's such an interesting parallel. You often get finalists in New York who are riding this fairy tale wave. They've won their conference title. They're off to the playoff. And they punctuated with a big win and a bunch of stats. That's not really the case. I mean, Caleb Williams and Duggan played spectacular games. Their teams came up short. Williams is not in the playoff. Duggan is in the playoff. And I think that you've got a little bit of texture and different feel to things. But when you watched each of those guys play, Friday night and then Saturday afternoon, I mean, didn't they look like Heisman finalist type guys? I mean, I don't know that Williams has it wrapped up. Oddsmakers thought that he did before Friday. He is as proud of that game as any game he's played. I talked to Caleb, and it wasn't the win, but him managing the pain and the injury and fighting to the very last play for his guys who couldn't protect him and couldn't tackle Utah. SC was exposed as being a long way from competitive against the elite teams in the trenches, but that wasn't because of Caleb Williams and the heart and the guts that he showed. If you thought he was right there before, I don't know you knock him down too much because they got thumped on the scoreboard, my opinion.
Chris, before you go, you've covered and been part of so many amazing events, 25 years at Game Day, the national championship, the semifinals, the game of the week. What is the Heisman experience like as the host?
Man, that's a great question. It's evolved so much over the years. From when I was a young kid in 1994, we hosted the show. I didn't really know what we were doing in that room, the DAC in Lower Manhattan. It had a ceiling about 8 feet tall and was loaded with all these former winners. And it was an incredibly intimate experience. The players and their families sat 6 feet away from you. And you could feel the energy and the tension and the sweaty palms. That occasion has reduced a lot of calm, poised players on the field to sweaty messes because it's out of their control. And they sit there for an hour and wait to hear one name read. And even if they think they've got it, even if they think they have no chance, I promise you the pulse rate is up there. And guys like Carson Palmer, who was very chill, very even keel, said he felt that his heart was coming out of his shirt in the final minutes before that announcement. I mean, even Bryce Young was very calm, incredibly cool under pressure. I mean, he was a little keyed up going in that room, thinking that he probably had it won, but not knowing for sure. It's a fun thing for the finalists to be able to meet each other, hang out a bit, and a lot of the former winners are hanging around there, and they get a sense of it. And I think that the guys who will be there will hopefully take it all in and be appreciative and know how lucky they are to just be in that group. And then one of them gets their name read and has a life-changing moment. And Bryce would tell you that. Again, he handled the success of it really well, but it's how others around you behave differently toward you. That's what a lot of the guys have talked about. So, I've done it for so long, and it's just a really special night for me. You stand up there, no teleprompter, you got some note cards, and you just sort of use your feel for the event and kind of get by on that. We prepare a lot, but there's a lot that goes into the evening that sort of feels like a live performance, unlike anything else I do.
Incredible conversation about that and everything else from Chris. Thanks so much, Chris. You be well. We'll be watching and talking to you as we get closer to New Year's Eve. I think I just saw something run behind you. I hope you're safe in there. I don't know what that was, but
that was my lovable cat Stanley, who I guess maybe it's time to get fed. He just did a lap behind me in the room.
Great stuff, as always.
He's excited about Coach Prime, Paul. Like everybody else in the CU family, my cat is ecstatic about Coach Prime being in Boulder, so we'll see.
I have a feeling we're going to see that shot again of Stanley running behind you. Thank you, Chris. Chris Fowler joining us. A YouTube moment on the Feinbaum Show. Stanley telling Chris Fowler, "I'm hungry. Get off that stupid show." We are coming right back with much, much more.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. Let's grab some more calls. And Alan is in South Carolina. Hello, Alan.
Hello, Mr. Feinbaum. How are you doing, sir?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, look, I want to make a point here. It's I'm going to be succinct about it, but poignant to these Bama fans. Now, much has been said about Saban's long run of success against those former assistants and, you know, those head-to-head matchups through the years. And, of course, you know, Jimbo Fisher, Kirby Smart are the two exceptions, to my knowledge, as of to date. But consider this, and I believe this is indicative now of Alabama's direction and Georgia's direction going forward. Kirby Smart is the first coach, assistant coach, to not have to beat Saban. And I think that's very poignant to the Bama fans, should be. Case in point, look at Mr. Saban's crude effort over the weekend. It was crude. Song by Buddy Guy. I know you're a music lover, Steely Dan. Me
sure.
Too. Buddy Guy has a blues song. I don't know the title, but it's your time now, but my time's coming soon. I think that song has come to fruition. It's Georgia's time now. Alabama's time has passed. Go Dawgs, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a conversation that is being had by a lot of people. It's not determinative yet where we go with that. Certainly, the trend lines are starting to emerge, and as soon as you say that, for what in some ways was an enormously frustrating year for Alabama, they missed the playoffs by one play. It's a bad year, and it shows you what they have done and what the standard is. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it very much. RW is up next.
Good afternoon, Paul. How are you today?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Good. I've been wanting to ask you for a while. Rich Rodriguez, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't his name in the hat for the Alabama job several years ago, but at the last minute it was taken out because his wife didn't want to live in Alabama?
Here's what happened. In 2006, right after Mike Shula was let go at Alabama, Alabama offered the job to Saban. He said, no, I'm in the middle of the season. Don't bother me. He was at the Miami Dolphins. They went to Spurrier, and they finally offered the job to Rich Rodriguez, who was at West Virginia. He accepted the job. A press conference was scheduled for the next day. And early that morning, he backed out. There's a lot of speculation on what happened. I don't think his wife was reluctant to move to Alabama was the overriding factor. They ultimately moved there for another job at Jacksonville State. But I think the governor of West Virginia at the time, now Senator Joe Manchin, got involved. They gave him a big raise. They did everything they could to keep him there. And he made what I thought was a pretty bad choice. He ended up leaving West Virginia to go to Michigan, where he bombed out. And where'd he go then? Arizona, I think. Yeah, Arizona. And then he got fired there, and now he's at Jacksonville.
Well, I thought maybe he changed his mind, but Alabama, since he didn't have a job, maybe it looked pretty good. But anyhow, I'm glad you cleared that up. But one other thing, too, my thoughts on why Alabama got left out, maybe it was because of Alabama fatigue, and also maybe it was some payback to TCU for being left out before. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the TCU factor could be important. Even though these are different people, the administrators are the same, and that was an embarrassing moment, the way they handled that eight years ago. Elliot is in Ohio. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul, we're going to give you a pardon on the jump in the East River, only because aliens have abducted Paul Feinbaum and Heather Dinich with all this positive Big Ten talk. But this is how I see it playing out this year. The best scenario for the Big Ten is Day beats Georgia and Ohio State and Michigan meet in the championship game, and Michigan wins it, because nobody's talking about Michigan right now, and they are the bomb this year. They really have the potential to bring the Big Ten back to better than they've ever been before. That's the best scenario for the Big Ten.
Yeah, no, I think I don't think that game will happen, but it would be an intriguing matchup. And think about this for a second. What happens if that? I guess if Ohio State beats Georgia, then all will be right again for Ryan Day. But what if he either gets blown out by Georgia, or beats Georgia and then gets blown out by Michigan again? You tell me, as a Buckeye.
Well, as a Buckeye, it would be devastating. But for the Big Ten, we need Michigan back. We need them back in prominence.
I mean,
because when USC comes back, and we have Michigan strong, we have Ohio State strong, he's top four coach. He's not going anywhere if he loses both games, or if he loses either of those games.
No, you're right. We're down here in the South, but you can't look past the fact the Big Ten's had a big year. Off the field, with Southern Cal coming in, the television contract, and now getting two teams in the Final Four. We will check in with Kim next in North Carolina. Hey, Kim.
Hey.
Hey there.
Hey, I'm ready to go around and round with Paul.
Well, good. I'm looking forward to it. Go right ahead.
Take your best shot.
Well, I want to ask Paul how Saban got to go over his team and nobody else got to go over why they should get in the playoffs. I didn't like that at all.
Yeah, I think ultimately you have to wonder who is giving Nick Saban public relations counsel, because there had to be a better way. I mean, I'm sure he's got PR people. He's got a director of publicity or whatever it's called down there. I know I've met him before, but he did it in a very inartful way. There should have been a strategy. If you're going to drag out the best coach in college football history, have a game plan. Nick Saban wouldn't walk on the field without being prepared, and it looked like somebody had handed him an index card when he went on Fox, and he just read the. I mean, he didn't believe that. Coach Saban didn't believe the Vegas line approach. I mean, I don't know if his director of publicity handed that to him. He obviously his guy had to set up the interviews. Nick Saban's not calling all these places. He's not calling ESPN. He's not calling Fox, and ultimately, I blame the PR people at Alabama for doing a shabby job of preparing Nick Saban for those television appearances. And I think sometimes when you're number one, when you can look down at the world like sometimes his people do, the people around him, when you're entitled, when everything always goes your way, when suddenly you need some help, it's a little bit of a different story, and it was shameful, frankly, for the advice that Nick Saban got and the preparation that he was given or handed to go out there and do that. It was a very bad look. We'll take a short break. Back with much more.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back on the day after, as we continue to unpack it all, the Monday after season, and we have plenty of bowl games coming up. A lot of talk. We'll be, of course, be in Atlanta as well for the coverage in a couple of weeks. But there's a little bit of breather before we get to all that. Let's bring in Andre, our friend out there. Andre, good afternoon.
Coach Paul Feinbaum, thanks for taking my call, Coach. Look, I'm an LSU fan. Georgia took us behind the woodshed, didn't it, Coach?
I think you got out lucky. It should have been worse.
Listen, I would go with Nesmeyer. I tell Jaden Daniels, you know what, going to transfer portal. He can't throw the deep ball. He can't throw the deep ball no more accurate than you and I, Coach Feinbaum. He can't. And I was listening to this guy earlier talking about we need Michigan back. Hell, what is he talking about? In the last 70 years, Michigan's got 1.5 national titles. What is this guy talking about, Coach?
I have no idea. Michigan is like a comet. I mean, you see them, and then they're back in 77 years.
Bo Schembechler, come on, man. He never won a national championship. You know, Laura Carr won a half of one. But these fans of Michigan beating their chest, you think that they were the standard of college football the way they act around here. And if people think that the Big Ten is a better conference than the SEC, I will promise them, wait till the NFL draft goes down, and we'll see the measuring tape and who's who. But anyway, hey, Coach, I enjoyed your show, and thanks for taking my call, Coach Feinbaum.
I'm sure – I wonder if Saban considered using recruiting rankings in NFL draft as his criteria. But he couldn't because Georgia won that too last year. Let's continue with more. Bill is in Ohio. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Paul. Hi there. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
Full disclosure, I called you at the beginning of the season and was not too kind about Brian Kelly. I mean, I just didn't like him. I don't like him, you know, his personality and all. But a couple of weeks ago, you still had him as potential coach of the year with two losses, but I just wondered how you felt about him now. And about the transfer portal real quick, I just saw on your headline there at the bottom where Jurkovic or whoever he is transferring again. I mean, what do you think about the portal in general? And, I mean, shouldn't there be a limit to how many times these guys can transfer?
There should be. I'm trying to remember who
that'll be his third.
Yeah. Slovis, too, went from SC to Pitt. Now he's in the quarterback. He's in the portal. I think everybody should have a free pass. You go to college, you make a decision with all your friends around you in the lunchroom, sure, and you put on the wrong hat. But there comes a point when you just can't say, hey, okay, I screwed up once, I screwed up again. I mean, I think at that point there should be some distance between when you can just jump to the next school. But obviously there's not.
I'm surprised somebody would be there to take them.
It's amazing how desperate losing coaches are.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. But, yeah, I mean, or maybe there shouldn't be. Coaches bounce around all the time, so why can't quarterbacks? Why can't players? Let's check in with Demetrius in Mississippi. Hello, Demetrius.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. Hope
Thank you.
And your family doing well.
We are. We're doing great.
Good, thanks. So, and I just heard the last call about the portal. I'm actually a big fan of the portal. That's not why I'm calling, but I'm a big fan of the portal. I think you go wherever make you happy. But it kind of ties into what I did call for. Deion Sanders at Colorado's press conference, what would you say if your son was, and I'm going to use JT Stroud because he's been a starting quarterback at Colorado, when the new coach come in and said, we got some positions already set because I bought my own luggage. What do you tell your son if that was him? Because I'm not sure if he wanted to go to Colorado all his life. You know, you do have the Stetson Bennett out there, Brady Cooks in Missouri that was going to that school no matter who the coach is. So I have to imagine this kid is going into his fourth year at Colorado with three or four different head coaches. He literally must love that school. But what would you say to your son? What would you say to him if he was your son when the new coach come in and say, we have the position already set? And Deion did try to walk it back and say he's got to earn it, but let's just be for real.
You know what, Demetrius, I think that comes under the heading of trying to be a comedian. And he was very funny, but you're right. He knows better than that, and I'm not giving him a pass. I mean, but I think he just was trying to emphasize where he is. But he's entitled to walk it back. I've said some really stupid things in front of an audience, and like every day.
Right. And you do have the best call-in show, the best show, period. Like,
well, thank
a lot
you,
of us
buddy.
Listen
thank
every
you.
Day, and we don't always call, but it seems like we all know each other. Like, this is crazy. Like, you have the best show, without a doubt.
Well, thank you. I'm really proud of what we do. We, in fact, we have a guest on in about an hour from the New York Times who mentioned the Feinbaum callers in his article today about the playoff. All day long yesterday on ESPN, they played a montage of our callers, and I'm the beneficiary of it, but to me, that's what separates us. It's not the hosts, it's the callers that make this show renowned around the sport and around the country. People know our callers. Reese Davis in the biggest show of the year in college football, seen by millions of people. What did he mention? Who did he mention? He mentioned legend. I mean, that's not I was on the number one show in Boston last week. They mentioned our callers, legend included. So that's really what gives all of us here behind the scenes a great deal of pride. Probably me more than the rest, because I feel like I'm attached to these callers and have been for many, many years. We'll take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls right after this.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And in 15 minutes for the Heisman, and in 2 hours from now, we'll find out who will be heading to New York to sit in the front row. Naturally, the four Heisman finalists will be announced on the NFL Monday Night Countdown show. Let's get back to the calls, and Walker is in Kentucky. Good afternoon, Walker.
Hey, Paul, thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much.
I am actually formerly Walker of South Carolina, but no longer as deep in SEC territory as I'd like to be. But anyway, I want to ask about your thoughts on Dabo Swinney and his management of DJ this year. I won't attempt to say his last name, but it seems like you keep pulling a kid in and out like that, his confidence is going to be crushed. And I just thought that was really poor on the part of Dabo. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought he blew it. And I think that was evident by the change Saturday and how it looked. And to me, Dabo Swinney has a coaching problem. He's not him, it's his assistants. He lost his top two offensive minds, as you know. He lost his defensive wizard. And I think he's had a very difficult time overcoming that.
Yeah, I agree. And that's tough on a quarterback. And I think it could be difficult on Klubnik, too, or at least I'm sure during times this season. But now it's his job. So we'll see how it goes moving forward. But I don't know if I trust this program.
And Walker, how many times did we hear when DJ signed with Clemson that, this was the next Trevor Lawrence? He was a can't-miss five-star. The number one player in his classification. Thanks for the call. By the way, the hits keep coming for Alabama, and I never remember a weekend where there was more criticism of the program and Nick Saban. The latest coming, just published by USA Today, Dan Woken, their lead columnist, under the heading Georgia is college football's new death star. And another title feels inevitable. The subtitle, the Bulldogs don't just win games, they suffocate opponents in a way nobody else in the country, even Alabama, does anymore. Dan, the University of Alabama Athletic Department PR head is on line one to criticize you for that. Let's check in with Freddie in Tennessee. How are you, Freddie?
I'm good, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have two questions, if you allow me. Do you see Nick Saban kind of blowing up, and when I say blowing up, changing a lot, OC, DC, and even more maybe?
Was that a big group in the 70s and 80s, OC, DC?
Oh, it was AC/DC.
They were good. I do see that happening, absolutely. I think both coordinators will be gone. I think if we weren't in the middle of recruiting, they'd be gone already. Saban will figure out a way to mask it as both are getting promotions elsewhere. But I don't think there's any chance that either one returns. And that may not. And I think that will lead to more changes as well.
I have one more question. Do you see the NIL and the transfer portal being kryptonized, Coach Saban? Do you think that's what it is?
I think it's part of it. Yeah, I think it's the biggest thing. What Nick Saban did so effectively was he recruited to a system that was infallible. We won national championships. I'm speaking as him now. We get you ready for the NFL, and then we succeed in placing you in the NFL. And now there's so many other. I mean, every coach that talks to us, we had Shane Beamer on a couple of days ago. Other coaches, the NIL is the first question you get when you go visit a recruit, and it's not like Alabama can't deal in that platform, but so can everyone else. Hector is in Texas, and you are next up. Good afternoon.
Hey, how you doing, Paul Feinbaum?
We're doing great. Thank you.
We want to know, we think the current transfer portal is more important than recruiting out of high school. We've seen a lot of big recruits already enter their names, and then we want to see what your opinion on that is.
I think recruiting is extremely important, but the most dangerous thing to every coach right now is the portal. Because no matter how hard you try for 3 or 4 years to get someone in there, they can be gone like that.
That's a good take. And I also wanted to get your thoughts on how do you think Deion Sanders and all the current recruits looking at Colorado and the NIL deals, how do you think that's going to shape up in, I think, 2 or 3 years?
I think he'll start getting some big players. Right now, in many respects, Deion Sanders is the biggest singular name in college football. And I realize Kirby Smart, Nick Saban, but if you're a player and you're not sure where you want to go, Deion Sanders could be your destination. I mean, he's done so well. And how many of you really thought he would? When it was first announced, it seemed like it was a publicity stunt. It seemed like it was all about Coach Prime. And then we started learning more about him. And I have come to be his biggest fan, and I wasn't that way at the beginning. I thought, come on, Deion, this is about the players. This is about the institution. But he made it palatable to be about him because I think the influence that he has, and I know some people in Jackson are disappointed and upset, understandably so, but you can't complain about what he brought you. He brought you College Game Day. He brought you a 60 Minutes profile. He brought you the attention of really not only the sports world, but of the real world to see what he had done there. And he made a tremendous impact. Let's check out Levi in Birmingham. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul Feinbaum. How you doing?
We are doing great, Levi. Thank you.
Hey, man, I got a question for you. Well, really not a question. It was one thing that Chris Fowler had right early on your show. The Alabama fans are smart. They smart enough to know when they're being bamboozled. Because every time you turn around, it's the teams out of the Big Ten somehow always trying to get up him for a championship. And the SEC always beat them up. I don't understand why did Alabama did not move up without the committee say a loss is a loss and TCU lost. That's what got a lot of Alabama fans confused. When you lose in your in a championship game, let me try one thing on you.
You're right. They lost, and they lost in overtime. But I think the problem for Alabama was they weren't playing on Saturday. And let me just give you a hypothetical here. Had Alabama beaten LSU, a lot of us have said I made the mistake of saying this, and I want to make sure I correct it. Had Alabama beaten LSU, where would they have been Saturday? They would have been in Atlanta, right?
You're right. You're dead right about that.
And
but
I don't think they would have beaten Georgia.
You don't?
No, I do not.
Okay, do you think they'd beat Ohio State? Do you think they could beat Michigan?
Yeah, but I think they could. And I think they could beat TCU, but I don't think they could beat Georgia.
Wow.
And well, all this conversation, I don't know why you're so surprised.
I'm not surprised because Alabama beat Georgia in the SEC championship.
That was a year ago. But what has Alabama done since then, and what has Georgia done since then?
Well, you get Georgia's on an upcline, but they could be beat too.
Well, of course they can. But I think that's the one question none of us have considered: what would have happened Saturday? Alabama didn't have to deal with that.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.